the leaders that we need to be for today and for tomorrow. We will not bend. We will not bow. We are going to continue to do the work that we need to do. We're going to continue to uplift Blacks in labor and the Black community as a whole.
Wonderful. Well, President Melvin, I want to thank you for your inspirational message during this 100-year celebration of Black labor's continued contribution to organized labor.
Thank you for having me, Tina. It's always a pleasure to spend time with you.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
Coming Monday, March 16th at 11 p.m., Gremlin Time presents a suspense double feature.
You're alone and unarmed in the green hell of a Caribbean jungle. You're being trailed by a mad hunter who believes that you, a human being, are the most dangerous game.
Paul Frees and Hans Conry star in this adaptation of The Most Dangerous Game. Also, The Mask of Demetrios, starring Sidney Greenstreet and Peter Lorre.
Let's put down a date. Istanbul, Turkey, 1938.
Monday, March 16th, 11 p.m., Gremlin Time.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and the nonprofit Oregon Potters Association, presenting its annual event, the Ceramic Showcase, with the Gathering of the Guilds, April 24th through 26th at the Oregon Convention Center. More info is available at ceramicshowcase.com.
You're tuned to KBOO Portland, community radio for the Northwest.
It's now time for Doug Holm and Film at 11.
Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else, to another Film at 11 here on your community radio, KBOO Portland. Today, we welcome Matthew of KBOO's, the monthly adult bedtime story program, Gremlin Time. And he's going to talk about certain aspects of the DC and the Marvel comic book and movie universe. Essentially, we'll be covering the new Superman, which came out last year, and also the Fantastic Four, the newest of the okay, so we'll both basically be covering those, but a little background is required about relating to a few movies that appeared earlier in the year before, the year before that, that set up a lot of the narrative for these two new additions to their universes.
It seems like a whole new approach to movies where it's not just one movie and the story can be bigger than one movie, or there can be a story within the movie. And then while we're getting that story, we get new characters, and then a new movie comes out and we follow those characters.
Yeah, that's right. It's like movies have now become episodic television.
Sort of, or like the comic book.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, for a while, Superman came out every, a new Superman comic book came out every week, the way they had titles lined up. And so you would have a story that continued through the titles, or you would have each one have its own adventure going on. But without going back to, you know, the origins of Superman, but essentially, you know, Superman isn't just in the comics. I mean, as soon as it was a hit in the comics, the company franchised it out to radio and to the newspaper strips and to the movies. And so it was known to people outside of just comic book readers.
That's true.
And I first came across Superman on television.
Right.
And then comic books. And I found the comic books just much better science fiction, more scope, because it's just ink on paper. But Superman is still established in the movies, and especially the 1977 movie, which was in that first line of blockbusters. You know, there was Jaws and then Star Wars, and the companies were scrambling around for their own products. And here, Warner Brothers had the rights to Superman, and so they came out with a big Superman movie that's very popular. And so this new Superman movie incorporates elements from the comics, but also from the movies. The relationship of Clark and Lois kind of comes from that 1977 movie.
Right.
Reeve and Marga Kidder. And some of the people think the actress in the new Superman movie is doing some bits kind of like Kidder had done in that original movie.
I didn't see that exactly. I saw more of it. I saw more of the Clark, Lois and Clark series.
Yeah, yeah. And so that kind of was a shift in Superman. I mean, where it's no longer, well, there's still a secret. They keep the secret in this new movie. Uh-huh. The secret used to be that Clark Kent was Superman.
Right, and so everybody,
the radio and the TV.
Everybody in the newsroom knows. But also, speaking of newsrooms, the film does try to modernize the world of Superman. Yeah. Because there now are bots, literal monkeys, all typing away to create, tilt the internet opinion away from Superman and toward Lex Luthor, the perennial villain of the series.
Sort of, what's his name? The computer guy who thinks he's so hot.
Elon Musk?
Yeah, he's kind of a Musk sort of villain.
Yeah.
That kind of villain predates Musk. Luthor is that sort of villain right from the start. It's a nice...
And what's funny is that I forget the actor who plays Lex Luthor in this movie, but he looks exactly like Matt Taibbi, the podcaster and reporter for Rolling Stone and numerous other newspapers, who has got a popular podcast called The Racket. So I don't know if that was intentional, but it's a funny in-joke if it is.
The Superman movie, I've noticed that the DC Warner Brothers, they've now brought in James Gunn, and they're doing a new relaunch of their titles, and I think it's done very cleverly. It brought in the whole multiverse of the DC universe, the different incarnations of DC. Back when, you know, they were just producing one movie at a time, and then it would become a hit, then they'd make a sequel, and they couldn't quite get everybody back for the sequel, And the quality kind of went down, and the movies thought, well, people just aren't interested in these anymore. And then a couple of years later, they try it again. It's just, I think it's just because they didn't properly pay any attention to continuity.
Also they didn't understand the comics.
Right. And now the comics rework continuity all the time.
Uh-huh.
And now the movies have been around enough, they've got their own continuity to a certain degree.
So the first movie... we're talking about is the recent Superman.
Your choices. Your actions. That's what makes you who you are.
Two things surprised me. One, it's a lot funnier than other Marvel and DC comics. I mean, there's a striving for humor, visual wit, in-jokes, romantic rom-com stuff, screwball comedy. But at the same time, Superman is... I can't remember what happened in the previous Superman movie, but apparently he lost a battle with a creation of Lex Luthor's. And so Superman's lost a fight, and he spends a lot of the movie either beaten up or ill or recovering from injuries. And he barely conquers conquests anybody. And thanks to Lex Luthor's monkey bots, everybody in America hates him. I mean, I think that's happened before in earlier. I mean, it happens to Marvel characters all the time. The Fantastic Four are always being... denigrated.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man, I mean, it's a great testimony of decades before the internet to how easily the mob or the crowd are controlled by people like J. Jonas Jameson, the Spider-Man publisher, and others.
Well, that was a thing in both of these movies. I noticed they use similar things but differently. Both have the city and the citizens of the city are active characters in the story, in both of them, but done in different ways. And so, getting back to the Superman movie, I felt that with DC, with that Flash movie, where the Flash tries to change history, and then, of course, end up exposing all the multiverse and all the DC incarnations, by the end of the movie, all of those are kind of put in a display case and set aside, mm-hmm. and we're starting new, and that start new is the Superman movie. And so that's what I'm sort of, is they've taken all of the movies where it was done by people who didn't really understand the comic books very much, but people liked them and went along with them. So they're there, and you can like draw stuff from them. And this movie does draw some elements from those previous movies.
Yeah, well, for one thing, in The Flash, he goes back because of his speed. He can travel in time. And that's something that happened, I think, in either the first or the second Superman movie from Donen, which was that Superman flies around the Earth numerous times and changes its axis or rotation so it goes back a few days. I can't remember.
Yeah, he resets time. And it's like when you're getting that far, you're losing the threads of the story. And it just shows, again, that they really didn't understand the characters that well. Because after he does that, he ends up picking a fight with somebody who had beat him up when he didn't have his superpowers.
Right.
And he didn't know how to fight. And he goes back and picks a fight with the guy. Now he has his superpowers back, and the guy doesn't even remember that they'd had a fight.
Yeah.
There's a lot of problems with those movies. And I think that DC has just kind of all wrapped them up and put them together, and they're there. You can go back and look at them, but we're going to move on with a different story. And it starts with Superman crashing into the Antarctic.
Right.
Starting with the second movie, we're wisely hiding the first movie within the start, the introduction of the second movie.
Right.
So we're not bothering with the first movie, which I think is a good idea.
Oh, I see how it works. Yeah. So we've never seen the battle for Bavarbia or whatever the country is.
Yeah. So it's a new story, and we have a new supervillain, this Ultraman, which is a clone from Superman's DNA. This kind of leads to the Bizarro Superman and later things. But it's a nice restart. We reintroduce to the crew at the Daily Planet. And these are elements that have grown onto the Superman story over the 75 years its character has been around in popular media. And so now Lois and Clark have a relationship, and that's now the secret. They're trying to keep that a secret. As before, it was, is Clark Superman? Now the new secret is this relationship. And they brilliantly use that to complete the introduction of what Superman is about. So when Superman comes to Lois's apartment after work, they have this scene, you get a little moment that you have in a relationship when you've got to explain what you're about in this relationship and who you are. And we nicely have that sort of romantic moment.
Are you being serious right now?
Yeah.
You'd let me interview you as Superman.
Sure.
Ready?
Let's do it, Cronkite.
Superman.
Miss Lane.
Recently, you've come under a lot of fire for what some might...
It's a
lot. Today, the Secretary of Defense said he was going to look into your actions. That's funny.
My actions? I stopped a war.
Yeah, that's a rather long sequence, too. A long sequence of them kind of... The changes evolves into an argument.
Yeah. But there, it's working the relationship in to introduce the audience to what this Superman is about. I mean, the other movies are like, is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? And they'll waste the whole movie on that. But here they're just getting it out of the way, but in a way that's engaging, is dramatic, because we're learning about this relationship.
Well, maybe this has to do with James Gunn, who also worked on the Marvel movies. But there's two elements that you see here in the Superman one, which is that there's a lot of... buildings tumbling into each other, like in the Avengers, Manhattan is laid waste and almost the whole world is almost destroyed at one point.
Yeah.
But then the second one I'll just add quickly is the reliance on Deus Ex Machina. In other words, Superman rarely gets himself out of a problem. Some other creature or person or element comes in and, rescues them. It's almost like snitch culture, that great designation by Jim Redden, the reporter, you know, because when you think of, I mean, as Mark Christensen used to say, Superman is just a cop who gets in fist fights with people. You know, the comic book's a little more complicated because they're science fiction oriented, a lot of science fiction elements. But in the TV shows, he's just a cop stopping like Batman. So what this ends up meaning is that he gets into a bind and he has to rely on snitches the way that the FBI and the cops do. You know, CSI is that whole thing is a myth. You know, they can put fingerprints on guns and whatnot, but really. What ends up happening, as in the Tonya Harding case and so many others, somebody cracks and snitches on the other people. So that's what happens in Superman. There's a snitch hidden within the Lex Luthor organization. And that gives the filmmakers a chance to really broaden, not to spoil anything, but really broaden the Jimmy Olsen character in a way that you have to see to understand. But anyhow, so the Deus Ex Machina, like Crypto the dog, and some of the other
superheroes. The whole Superman thing is that he's a super, he has super strength, and he can fly, and he's invincible. He himself is that Deus Ex Machina himself. That's the whole fantasy thing of it. But they don't let it get out of hand. He has limits on him. Someone can beat him up, but he can heal quickly, but it's painful. And
right.
He goes through that. But I think he pretty much, you know, the way he defeats Ultraman is he's aware of what's going on and is able to defeat him. And I think that's a key thing. The George Reeves Superman could never defeat anybody who was stronger than him or as strong as him. Mm-hmm. He always defeated weaker people. But here, Superman is thinking. He figures out how to get to defeat Ultraman. He neutralizes Lex and his people so that Mr. Terrific can come in and reset the gap that's been torn apart in reality, basically. But then the thing I felt was unique was the press. For the first time, the press, they come up and they say, yes, Superman has stopped Lex Luthor, and he's righteous, because look at what we found out that what Lex Luthor is doing. And I can't recall a moment when the Daily Planet is actually used as a newspaper. It's usually just a setting for where Clark and Lois, you know, find out what's going on, and then they go from there. But here, for once, they were worried. They were getting the paper out. They were getting the story together as they're flying around in Mr. Terrific's spaceship.
Right.
And then when they send it, they see it's not just a newspaper, but there's podcasts and internet and this whole thing that they send it out on. And so I thought that was a major change, in that it really brought the Daily Planet and the newspaper as an element of the story, because they help, you know, Superman physically neutralizes Lex Luthor, but it's the newspaper that justifies it and shows that he needs to be locked up.
And also, they've completely rethought the Justice League of America and turned it into a comic sidekick kind of a world, with Nathan Fillion and
excellent job as the most ridiculous super Green Lantern.
Exactly. It shows the influence of some of these new TV shows that have come out that posit various superhero groups, and some of the people are just kind of evil instead of just being comical or incompetent.
The boys is one. So we found it was very enjoyable. As a longtime Superman fan, it satisfied the movie fans, it satisfied us comic book fans, and it really moved it together in a kind of solid storyline that, you know, we can't wait for the next movie. It would be anyway.
Yeah. So you like that one. That one gets the upraised thumb. And
now, the actor who is in the plays Perry White in this, he also appeared in The Thunderbolts.
Wendell Pierce. And he's also in The Thunderbolts.
and he's also trying to expose what's actually going on by the villains. So now, just to switch over to Marvel, I felt like at the end of the last Spider-Man movie, where Parker has Dr. Strange erase everyone's memory that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. And it means he has to leave his school friends. And so he goes off on his own at the end of that. I kind of felt it was a great sort of becoming an adult, like the grew up with, you're allowed to be friends with for life. Then you just move away. Just life changes and you move on. And that's kind of shown in that. But also Marvel is moving on to a new lineup of heroes. And we get that in the Thunderbolts. Characters like first appeared, Yelena, who first appeared in the Black Widow movie. And she's kind of on end. She doesn't know what to do with herself. She visits her old foster dad. We get the introduction of the Thunderbolts. And this is really a nice comedy adventure film.
It's actually also really funny. And
yes,
characters are really, really developed. And Imogene Poots is terrific as Yelena. And just
the Red Guardian actor.
Yeah. So, right. So again, they're forming a new team.
Yeah, a new team. They're scrappy anti-heroes.
Yes.
So there's a scene in this where they're trapped. The villain was going to kill them all because she doesn't feel any use for him. So she's going to kill him, but they end up escaping and fighting their way out.
Right.
And they're lost in the desert. And here, her foster dad, the Red Guardian, shows up in this big old limo. I'm coming to save you. And so it's like suddenly it's like a moment in, you know, like you've been out with your best friends at the roller rink. You had the greatest time, but then your dad has to come pick you up. And you're so embarrassed.
Well, even more so, that's another example of that. That's another example of the deus ex machina, because his job as a chauffeur puts him in a position to overhear something really essential that is going to aid the Thunderbolts.
Yeah. And well, that's the name Thunderbolts comes up kind of as a joke, but it turns out that for these two characters, Yelena and Red Guardian, they were pretending to be a suburban American family, like in the series, The American, but then they pull off this mission. After that, she leaves the suburb and she's in this horrible school for young assassins and all this stuff happens to her. But still, she and the man, they look back at that time as the best time of their life, as seen by the Thunderbolts soccer team, girls soccer team, she tries to lead up, win a game. But here she's with the Thunderbolts. And as a joke, one of them says, after hearing about her story of the Thunder, says, "Oh yeah, we're the Thunderbolts," and the Red Guardian said, "You called them after the team. That's so." And it's just,
there's a running gag in Superman too about just what the new Justice League, will, not that there's reference to Justice League, but what this new team with Nathan Fillion will call themselves. And he has an idea. He's views himself as the de facto leader of these people, so only his word counts until at the end the fourth person comes in and he likes the new name of what I can't remember what it is now, but
Justice Gang.
Yeah. Anyway, again, these movies are actually quite funny. The only impediment with the Marvel one, perhaps more so, is you do have to have there's a lot of backstory.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I don't find that I didn't know what was going on ever. The filmmakers made it really clear. You don't have to have seen the other movies. There's no homework involved.
So here the Thunderbolts get established, and there's a very nice sort of turnaround at the end where Yelena establishes herself as the head of this crew.
Uh-huh.
And just as that's established, we have in a closing scene, a mysterious ship appears from out of the interdimensions, and it's got a big four on it. And that sets up for our final movie, The Fantastic Four.
Mr. Fantastic. Invisible Woman. Human Torch.
I love you, Johnny!
And The Thing.
Hey, what time is it? Say the date.
That's not really something I say.
It's clobbering time!
That's just in the cartoon. Never leave for Sunday dinner.
Now, Doug here, you bought Fantastic Four number one.
I did. Stand.
They enacted that cover in the movie.
That's right, yes.
Yes, and they introduced this character, Mole Man. But he's interesting. He's like a misunderstood guy. And,
Well, that was the key element of the Marvel comics. Appealing to the sense of identity that teenagers who read comic books tend to gravitate towards, you know. So, so Peter Parker is the ultimate misunderstood guy with a great secret, and is undervalued by the culture at large or his local community. Anyway, so yeah, the Fantastic Four is a complete restart of. You don't have to have seen any other Fantastic Four movies, which are generally pretty bad. And this one, at least, it doesn't reboot the Fantastic Four. It just goes back to the comics and tells the stories over again.
It reminded me of the X-Men, the First Class, where it had that nice retro mid-century 60s look to it.
Right.
And here they establish that it's not on the same world that the other Marvel movies that we've been following have been set on. That's why at the end of the Thunderbolt, the Fantastic Four ship appears from another dimension.
Right.
And so we've already heard about the multiverses. And so even though we just see the ship, we recognize it, the four and everything, what's going on. And so now in this movie, it's like the second movie where they're already established. But here we start with an intimate scene where Reed and Sue find out that Sue is pregnant.
Right.
But also they've introduced the characters with a sort of, you know, a montage sequence, kind of like the start of Citizen Kane. We use a montage as introduction as opposed to a transition. Here we got Mark Gatiss, which I hope is a nice symbol of a meld of a joining between Doctor Who and Marvel Comics. It might happen. Mark Gatiss has been on Doctor Who and written some episodes.
Yeah.
Here he was this council guy. And so here again, the New York, the whole citizens, the way they're like a character, and like, we're going to fight Galactus, and they do, but they come back kind of half defeated. And I thought the dramatic point when they come back and suddenly they're put in front of the audience is, well, how'd you defeat Galactus? And they haven't. It's now even worse because Galactus is coming. And then they have to admit, well, he wanted our child. We couldn't give the child
up. No, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Then later, when Sue said, the actress playing Sue is so good in this.
Vanessa Kirby, right?
Yeah, and she says, you know, I'm not going to give up my child to save the Earth, but I am not going to sacrifice the Earth to save my child.
Yeah, so, boy, that's a real Sophie's choice there.
Yeah, and now they push through it. They come up with a plan, but then the plan's defeated, but then they come up with a second plan, and the way they have to push it through, I thought that climax, it really showed Mr. Fantastic, as well as how they use their strengths in an applied way. It's not just the punching and the knocking
out.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I think Ms. Kirby, she was really great here as Sue Storm, and just an exciting, satisfying film, I felt.
Yeah.
Again.
Well, in the few minutes remaining, how would you... So you would say this bodes well for both the DC and Marvel franchises.
Right. They're doing similar things. You know, you have the flashback, they introduce everybody. You have the city, you know, behind them and then against them. You have a child saving people. There are moments where like something's falling on people and the hero comes and catches it, keeps them off. So it's finally, I'm kind of feeling at last, you're finally getting decent comic book
movies. Oh, yeah. Okay.
I always found these stories satisfying. We weren't reading comic books because we couldn't read very well. We read because they were interesting. They were colorful, interesting characters. They, you know, it's super melodramatic, but I think they're engaging. And in these movies, it shows that the superhero is more of an allegory to people in their regular lives.
I know. The comic books were well-written. They were both in the everyday vernacular of the streets, but also in the yellow boxes at the top, the explanation boxes. There's quite a big vocabulary of words that Stan Lee uses, or the other writers. Anyway, well, we've been talking to Matthew of KBOO's Gremlin Time, and we've been discussing the new changes and looking forward to future Marvel comics adapted to the movies by people who know what they're doing for once.
That's for sure.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Matthew.
You're welcome.
And thank you for listening to Community Radio, KBOO Portland. Film at 11 will be back next Friday. So until then, keep watching the screens.
This is Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.